Hi folks, the following podcast was recorded just before the COVID-19 crisis really kicked into gear. It's with Rory Monaghan. He's research, teaching and tweeting about energy and engineering. He's Director of Energy Engineering, NUI Galway. It's a fascinating insight into Ireland's capabilities, possibilities and the probabilities of how we can adapt in terms of wind energy, renewables and all of the resources that are very much just off our coasts. It's just a short pod. It was recorded over the phone. Rory was very kind, and we did actually try and agree that we do a longer form when things settle down. As you probably know, we are doing a series of live unlockdown podcasts. So our most recent one with Mary Lou MacDonald is out now. So was our one this week with John Harris of The Guardian. And we had our first one was with Vicky Conway and Elizabeth Farries of Irish Council for Civil Liberties. They are all available on patreon.com/tortoiseshack, and we will be adding a couple of more exciting guests in the coming days. If you want to join us, please do. It's difficult times for everybody. This is our way of giving back, and it's also a way of, if you buy us the price of a cup of coffee, you can participate, come along, and maybe, you know, forget about the situation for about an hour or so. Thanks for the support for those who do. Just encourage you all to maybe tell a friend, share, because you know we have no sponsors, no ads, no nothing like that. We rely on you guys. Talk to you all soon. Thank you. We're delighted to be joined on the line by Rory Monaghan, lecturer in Energy Solutions Engineering in NUI Galway. Rory, thanks for taking the call.
You're very welcome. Happy to be here.
I suppose what triggered this was people talking around Ireland's need for energy independence coming up and the ability of us to actually harness wind energy. I've seen some statistics that, you know, and showed the potential for Ireland. Do you want to just give me first of all a bit of background about what you do, so we can just explain to listeners why Ireland has that potential and how you see it?
Yeah, of course. So I've got essentially two roles at NUI Galway. One of them is to teach our energy engineering students about how the entire energy system works, how power is generated, how it gets from wind farms or power plants to customers, why it's done that certain way, and all of the kind of the technical knowledge about how the energy system works. And then on the other side, I conduct research where my research team of students and I, we try to make new understandings and about how energy works now and how it could work better in the future. And one of the main things that we look at is how we can better integrate renewable energy into not just Ireland's energy system, but Europe's and the world's energy system. So as you mentioned there's a huge potential for Ireland to free itself from imported fossil fuels. And the big resource that we're blessed with in Ireland is wind and ocean. We are so over endowed with wind energy, or with the potential to make wind energy, and with the potential to make energy from our oceans. And we've only really started to scratch the surface. So the last couple of weeks have seen seen Ireland essentially hitting its maximum that it can currently handle of wind energy. And the question for researchers like me in Galway and in other universities and in the Irish energy industry is to try and work out how we can
dropped off there. Can you
sustainable energy into our system and reduce our imports of oil and gas?
Just want to check, is it possible that Ireland could be a net producer of energy, that we could actually export wind, the energy we create through wind?
That's a really good question, and I'll answer it by maybe making a little distinction here. So a lot of time when people talk about energy, what they're actually thinking about is electricity.
Yeah. So
electricity is one extremely useful form of energy, but it only accounts for 1/5 of the energy that we use throughout the year. The other 4/5 is transport fuels, so petrol and diesel, and heating fuels, so gas and oil and coal and turf. So now, just focusing on the electricity, this is where Ireland can really make a huge impact. Ireland, I believe, could become a net exporter of electricity over the coming decades. We're currently generating about a third of our electricity from our own renewable resources. That's primarily wind and a little bit of wood-burning power stations, but almost all wind. We have a target in Ireland to reach 70%. So 7/10 of all our electricity will come from our own renewable energy by 2030. And again, that would be predominantly wind, a mixture of wind turbines onshore as they are now and wind turbines offshore as they're being envisaged for the future. And there will be times of the year where we'll be producing more electricity than we need. So we will become a net exporter. And I have no doubt that between 2030 and 2040, we'll become an overall net exporter of electricity. The other aspects of energy, they're much harder because it's very difficult to, people talk about being addicted to oil. It's very difficult to kick the habit because oil has proved so useful. It's we all acknowledge how polluting it is, but to have that amount of energy locked up in a liquid that is so dense has really transformed society and is very difficult to find anything that replaces it and does quite as good a job as oil does. So it'll be a lot longer before we can kick out oil from our energy mix. And it's starting with electric vehicles. It needs to go further. We need to get more people on bikes, walking, using public transport. But we're going to have oil around for quite some time, and that means we're going to be importing oil for quite some time.
What does the Ireland, the energy-efficient Ireland, look like?
The energy-efficient Ireland, well, I've got this kind of vision, and I think a few researchers would have this vision, that we're using, first of all, in energy, we think about two sides of the coin. We think about the supply of energy and the demand for energy. And whatever the demand for energy is has to be met by some supply. So the very first thing we should do is reduce the demand. And that means, as you point out, improving energy efficiency. So the things that we can do, and the galling thing about this is most of these measures are going to save us money, but they require some upfront investment. So retrofitting homes, it's a complete no-brainer. Ireland has, I believe, the lowest energy efficiency homes in all of Europe, and we live in one of the most exposed places. So our homes need to be retrofitted to be more energy efficient, better insulated, better windows. None of this is, really, really glamorous stuff, but it's just all sensible. We need to have a much better public transport system. We need to basically make us not so car dependent. We're one of the most car dependent economies in Europe, and that stems from the kind of development that Ireland has seen over the last number of decades, where houses are built in a way that really makes them only accessible by car. I don't believe we can particularly blame people by being so car dependent, because that's where the houses are built. We do not have a good enough public transport system in Ireland. So that's really important as well. Getting then onto the supply side of energy, we just need to be exploiting the resources that are here. We're using a lot of onshore wind turbines, wind farms to make electricity. There's lots more sites that we can exploit on land. Wind turbine technology is getting better. We're getting more efficient at capturing the wind. But the real future, as I see it, for wind energy is to go offshore. Because offshore, the wind blows at a very constant rate, very, very consistently. It doesn't fluctuate as much. You can build turbines a lot higher, and they're not going to be overshadowing anyone's house. So it's a it's a offshore is where the future for energy in Ireland for me lies. If you look at the map of Ireland, our ocean territory is 10 times larger than our land territory for Ireland. So we've got an enormous capacity to grow offshore.
That is a very, like when you put it in that context, 10 times the footprint, the potential there for offshore. Surely that is where, are we seeing that, is the technology there? Are we advancing it quickly enough? And are we, you know, is it in our plans? Have you had proposals? What are we seeing in terms of actual, Ireland 2040 and our goals? Where is offshore in that?
Okay. So Ireland briefly, in the mid 2000s and around 2004, 2005, Ireland briefly was a leader in offshore wind. And, for a time, the largest offshore wind turbines were built off Arklow, in a place called the Arklow Bank off Wicklow. Mm. And the plan was that Airtricity, an Irish company, built 7 turbines initially, and they were going to see how they functioned offshore, and then they were going to expand it to over 100, possibly 200 turbines. And that would have been the world's biggest offshore wind farm at that time. But a couple of things happened after the initial 7 were built. The first one was... there was a sort of a decision taken at policy level that there was enough growth possibilities onshore that we didn't really need to focus offshore. So the emphasis was really kept onshore, that we would grow that out and then see where we stood after the onshore was essentially all used up. And then, of course, the recession hit around 07, 08. And that really slowed everything down, because the thing with offshore is it's a much better resource, but it's much more expensive technology. There's two main offshore technologies. One of them is where you essentially fix wind turbines to the seabed, and that's very similar to onshore technology, but it's just more expensive to build. They're exposed to the salty sea air. So there's maintenance problems with them, and how do you get workers out to them in a storm? These kinds of things. But it's a sort of a more tried and trusted technology. Those types of turbines are suitable in shallow water. So those are the kinds of turbines that could go in the Irish Sea and off the sort of the southeast coast of Waterford, Wexford. So essentially, our shallow water resource is anywhere from Waterford east and up the coast to the east coast of Northern Ireland. So that's being targeted right now for offshore development with these turbines that are fixed into the seabed. Mm. There's lots of plans. I couldn't say exactly how many are in the pipeline now, but there's a lot of farms being planned there that, if they all went ahead, would double the amount of wind energy that we're currently generating. Where it gets really exciting, but it is slightly more or slightly less developed technology, is looking at the West Coast. So the West Coast, the sea is much deeper, the sea is much rougher, but the wind resource is in so much larger. And these turbines that are fixed into the seabed wouldn't be suitable in this deep water environment. So we have to go to a new technology called floating wind, where you have wind turbines that are based on top of floating structures, and they're tethered to each other so they don't float too far. But they're essentially, they essentially float with the waves, and they can access phenomenal resources out there.
Hmm.
And is this all been privately funded? Is it in public ownership? And which way would you like to see it go? I mean, is there a buy-in for communities? Is there a buy-in for people within Ireland? Is there the possibility at some time in the future of a dividend?
There's a couple of different models, and like, I guess Ireland has been mostly pursuing a model which is called a feed-in tariff, which now this is being phased out. It essentially means that the people who develop wind farms will get a guaranteed level of income for each unit of electricity they feed onto the grid, they would get a guaranteed payment for that. And that was set up a number of years ago to essentially give a state guarantee that this relatively new technology would be supported through its development phase. This is being phased out now, and we're moving to a new model, which is based around auctions. And this would be where people who want to build wind farms would bid in an auctioning process, and it's a kind of reverse auction where the lowest bidder wins. So they would bid to the government to supply wind energy at various prices, and the company that bids with the lowest price essentially wins. And this model has been really successful in the UK at driving the cost of offshore wind down to such an extent that a number of years ago, the UK committed to build a brand new nuclear power station in a place called Hinkley Point. And because Britain hadn't built a nuclear power station in a number of years, the government guaranteed a very, very high price for the electricity that the nuclear station would sell to the grid.
Mm.
When these wind farms, when these offshore wind farms started this auctioning process, there was a lot of commentary that, oh God, this is going to be really expensive electricity produced. But this auctioning process has resulted in wind energy that is coming in at nearly half the price of what this nuclear station is being guaranteed. So there's a lot of talk, certainly in the UK, about, well, we've now seem to have cracked offshore wind. Do we need this nuclear station anymore, or can we just get our carbon-free electricity from the wind? This is the model that we're kind of moving to in Ireland now with this option. You mentioned something there about the public good and the public ownership, and this is maybe something where, in my opinion, Ireland hasn't been particularly strong, and it's been ensuring that the public or that the communities where these wind farms are built get an adequate say or an adequate stake in what's going on. I live in rural Ireland here in County Galway, and we have a very, very large wind farm near us, and the company that runs the wind farm has essentially gone above and beyond what the minimum requirement is for them. And they built up very, very good relations with the community. There was a lot of consultation when they built this wind farm, and it really is an extremely large one. But they fund a lot of local activities. They're not legally required to do this. And what you start to see is that a lot of wind farm operators don't do that. And they build up a lot of bad feeling with communities to such an extent that communities can be turned off it by hearing stories of what's happened elsewhere. So there needs to be, in my opinion, a lot more protection for communities that are having wind farms built nearby.
I think that's obviously that is a concern in Ireland. We've seen several people talk about the effects of in the communities, and we've heard everything from conspiracies to all sorts of other things about wind farms. But however, what is fascinating to me is the idea of that this auction thing, and then getting the fixing in the unit price for the electricity that they're going to bring into the grid, essentially. Because, you know, as we look across the globe, things like that haven't actually always delivered, you know. But I'm thinking more in terms of hydro. It became very problematic with the price of the electricity for the dams that were built in other countries, and they didn't really deliver. But you're saying to me now that this has shown that it was half the price. Is that what you said of the nuke?
It was coming in at nearly at slightly above half the price of the nuclear station.
Yeah.
So I think the thing with these auctions is that there needs to be a competitive environment for these auctions. So you need to have enough competitors there to make the auction worthwhile. Mm. Now, I'm less familiar with this hydro situation, but certainly in the UK, with offshore wind environment, there were lots of companies bidding. So the bidding became quite competitive, and they all wanted to get in and stake their claim. So they were... they did succeed in driving this price down. Now, I couldn't tell you what the price for the first option was, but certainly the most recent option was down around £55 per megawatt hour, which compared to what the Hinkley Point nuclear station was being guaranteed for 35 years, it was being guaranteed £95 per megawatt hour. So it was really, you know, a big reduction there.
Is there a place for micro production for households that are in a position to have their own miniature wind production and that they could feed back into the grid as well?
Yeah, and this is again an area that Ireland has historically been way behind our European neighbours on, but with the new government scheme from the Department of Climate Action, which incorporates this auction process, also includes the possibility for the first time for small scale generators for homeowners to get paid for putting power onto the grid. The overall scheme is called RES, the Renewable Electricity Support Scheme, and it's being rolled out right now. Under this scheme, homeowners will, for the first time, get paid for their electricity, which is only fair and proper. And while I don't want to get in and talk about wind energy specifically on a home scale, because people can maybe debate back and forth about whether it's wind at that very small scale is effective. Mm. Certainly, solar, people who've got solar panels just for making electricity, this will be a game changer for them, because solar panels, even on a cloudy day like today, solar panels are still making a small amount of electricity. They just need brightness in the sky. It doesn't need direct sunlight. They're still making a small bit of electricity. And if you as a homeowner have batteries, or even if you don't, if you're just connected directly to the grid, if you're producing more than you're using, you'll get paid for it. And that, I think, will be transformative in terms of how we get renewable energy accepted in Irish society.
Absolutely. It's, you know, people respond really well to incentives, as they say. If you want to change behaviours, give people a reason to, I suppose. Rory, last thing for me, just in terms of, going back to the wind, you know, I think Ireland currently, like, we are quite high, in our wind production. We're one of the highest as far as I recall, something around, and you were saying we want to move to 70% renewables, is it? So from that, so extrapolating that, how close or how quickly can we get there? I suppose that's, you know, we talk about the climate crisis and, you know, we talk about these weekly storms that we're having. All of these things obviously help us in terms of meeting our climate goals. How quickly can we ramp this up?
So I was at the Irish Renewable Energy Summit last week in Dublin, and there were a number of speakers talking about how we reach this 70% target. And we would need to be doing things a lot faster than the pace we're doing things than the pace we're going at now. If we kept going at the same pace, we would maybe get about halfway to that 70% target.
Okay.
But the good news is that I think with all of the, you know, the recent weather activity, and it does seem to be the case that a lot of this the weirdness in our weather, scientists do believe that climate change is playing a role in this. It's bringing it more up on people's consciousness. You can see that government is now being motivated to act. So it's we're slowly but surely getting there. It's just the pace of change needs to increase. And there are going to have to be some tough decisions, not just for government, but for society as well. And you know, they will revolve around questions around equity and fairness for wind farms. Mm. So a wind farm company will tell you, well, if you want cheap electricity brought in quickly, let us build more wind farms on more pieces of land. And then you're going to start encroaching on one-off housing. So where does the equity balance between the individual and the community, but and the national lead or and the national need, where do they meet, and where should a fair balance be? Offshore, as I said, is brilliant. It's going to be the future. There's a huge resource out there, but it is more expensive. So who's going to, it's more expensive for now in its initial phases. Who's going to support that? And how do we get it to a, sort of a long-term cost-effective option? So the pace of change absolutely needs to increase. And this still doesn't really address yet the other energy sectors that I talked about, the transport fuel and the heating. Mm. And, you know, this is, at the minute, this is essentially oil. So we're doing a great job with our electricity sector, but there needs to be more movement towards better public transport, towards insulating of homes. You know, we really need a people, you know, talk about these energy challenges as being like an Apollo mission. You know, I would totally agree with that. We need to devote a huge portion of our nation's effort and expertise and money, really, at the end of the day, towards addressing decarbonisation, because it's not going to happen without significant investment in the short term, but it will pay dividends in the long term. We've seen examples of that from other countries. It absolutely will pay off, but we need the tough decisions made now.
Well, thank you very much for coming on and having a chat with us. There's a lot to think over in that, and a lot to look forward to in the direction. Look, best of luck in the storm this weekend. I hope you can keep your head out of it. And thank you very much for coming on and having a chat with us.
Thanks very much.